Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Hope you're doing well tonight. Thanks for joining us. Bit of good news to start the program. William Crystal's column has ended in the New York Times. Yesterday, I missed it because I didn't read the Times editorial page yesterday, but a single sentence printed below Crystal's column yesterday said, "This is William Crystal's last column." The column itself made no reference to this, and there was no announcement from the New York Times. But just when you think the news is good, it's bad. Monday, the Washington Post, also on Monday, the Washington Post announced that it had hired Crystal to write a monthly column and contribute to its opinion blog titled Postpartisan. Why? I mean, isn't the country saturated enough with right-wing drivel? I mean, seriously, is there not a max out point? William Rivers Pitt, Tom Hartman, both of these guys are much better writers than William Crystal could ever hope to be. Has Hartman or Pitt been offered a job to do a column on the op-ed page of the New York Times? I don't think so. How about the Washington Post? No, not there either. Jesus. How about Barack Obama with the interview with Al Arabiya Network? We've got some sound from that for you. But in that interview, Obama struck a conciliatory tone toward the Islamic world, saying he wanted to persuade Muslims that, quote, "Americans are not your enemy," end quote. This was an absolute stroke of genius. Do you realize how many problems that the United States has on the international scene that would not exist had we at any time in the past, I could say the past 60 years, but let's not go back that far, in the past 20 years, shown an interest in fairness where it concerned the Israeli-Palestinian issue? If you want to go back further, if we had never overthrown the government of Iran in 1953, if we had not sold poison chemicals to Iraq in the 80s, Rumsfeld did, and then invaded the country. I mean, all the problems that go on that we have to deal with right now, the collapse, the deliberate collapsing of our constitutional protections by the Bush crime family because of the so-called war on terror, of the fact that we're now known as a torture country. I mean, just on and on and on. All these problems, isn't it interesting? They don't have their genesis because of our bad relationships with Australia or Russia or Panama or Ireland. They're because of the unfair, uneven treatment that we have displayed to the Palestinians vis-a-vis the Israelis and also our Middle East foreign policy for the past forever. So a brilliant move on the part of Obama. The interview, if nothing else, signaled a shift in at least style and manner. You know, no longer do we have a sociopath like George Bush standing there with his little jaw stuck out and his big flappy ears going in the wind while he talks about turn, all this other crap, you know? Every day that goes by, I'm thinking, you know, Barack is either the greatest con man on the history of American politics, where it concerns Americans, or he is the real deal. I'm starting to think he's the real deal. In a transcript that was published on Al Arabiya's English website, Obama said it was his job, quote, to communicate to the Muslim world that the Americans are not your enemy, end quote. And then he added something that, I mean, when have you heard this before, a president say this? While the president was in office, he said, quote, "We sometimes make mistakes," end quote. He went on to say, He hoped for a restoration of what he called, quote, the same respect and partnership that America had with the Muslim world as recently as 20 or 30 years ago, end quote. Regarding the Israeli-Palestinian horror, Obama told the network, quote, the most important thing is for the United States to get engaged right away. He went on to say that he told his new envoy there, George Mitchell, to, quote, start by listening. Start by listening, Jesus, because all too often the United States starts by dictating, end quote. Did you understand what he... And then he also said this, quote, ultimately we cannot tell either the Israelis or the Palestinians what's best for them. They're going to have to make some decisions. He went on, but I do believe that the moment is ripe for both sides to realize that the path that they are on is not going to result in prosperity and security for their people. And that instead it's time to return to the negotiating table, end quote. I mean, it almost makes me want to holler. You know what I'm saying? So here he is in certainly a brilliant move. Obama granted his first interview to El Arabiya. The reporter there, who is the Washington bureau chief for that network, asked this question. Sir, you just met with your personal envoy to the Middle East, Senator Mitchell. Obviously, his first task is to consolidate the ceasefire. But beyond that, you've been saying that you want to pursue actively and aggressively peacemaking between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Tell us a little bit about how do you see your personal role, because, you know, if the President of the United States is not involved, nothing happens, as the history of peacemaking shows.
Well, I think the most important thing is for the United States to get engaged right away. And George Mitchell is somebody of enormous stature. He is one of the few people who have international experience brokering peace deals. And so what I've told him is start by listening, because all too often the United States starts by dictating in the past on some of these issues, and we don't always know all the factors that are involved. So let's listen. He's going to be speaking to all the major parties involved, and he will then report back to me. From there, we will formulate a specific response. Ultimately, we cannot tell either the Israelis or the Palestinians what's best for them. They're going to have to make some decisions. But I do believe that the moment is ripe for both sides to realize that the path that they are on is one that is not going to result in prosperity and security for their people, and that instead it's time to return to the negotiating table.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? I mean, I had to say it before we played President Obama actually saying it, just so I could hear it twice. I mean, that's astonishing that somebody in such a primary position of power in this country, the President of the United States, would make a statement like that, that obviously is being seen or was seen, either live or taped. I'm sure it's being replayed over and over and over again, by literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people in the so-called Muslim world who see this guy sitting there acknowledging in a very indirect way that the United States has acted in the past as just a great, big, ugly, smart-ass, snotty bully. And that maybe it's time to change that tactic. Not do a 180 and become somebody's footstool, but just to get down off the high horse, to get down off the arrogance, and just say, hey, look, let's see if we can work this out before there's any more death and destruction and murder and mayhem. Is there a way to do that? I mean, if nothing else happens in this man's presidency, this will stick in my mind for the entire 4 years.
Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. Oh.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
From those ads, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war.
21 past the hour. I watched as much of the interview as Wolf Blitzer broadcast today in several parts, Barack Obama's interview with the correspondent from Al Arabiya Television. And again, it was pretty stunning stuff to watch. Just the mere fact that the event was occurring. I found it interesting. And it's not too big of a deal, but I found it interesting that a couple of the anchor people or the news readers around the various cable and over-the-air networks today made a point of referring to Barack Obama's first interview as president. First sit-down interview with president was granted to not to an American news organization, but to a foreign news organization, Al Arabiya. Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, obviously. First of all, Obama has gotten enormous coverage from media in this country. During the campaign and the election and the inauguration, that's A. B, I think Obama understands that no matter what he does with American media, the sound bites that are going to come out of interviews are going to be borderline. They're going to be skewed in a way that makes him look just a little bit off center. And I don't mean that politically, a little bit off center. So that the talking heads, people like Chuck Todd over at NBC, who is really starting to piss me off, there's a whole clutch of them now who have this kind of snarky, sneering reportage that they get involved in when they're reporting on the poor Republicans and the fact that Barack Obama is just not playing ball the way the Republicans want him to play. I'm really getting tired of it, and the guy has only been the president for, what, a week? Really, really, these people are just pissing me off. So, again, so good for Barack Obama for having the first big sit-down interview with Al Arabiya. Because you know that every single word that he said is going to be broadcast in context in its entirety. Al Arabiya is not going to cut up little sound bites and feed them to their audience the way it's done in this country. So, I was glad to see this interview. The reporter then asked another question about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. He said, one final thing about the Palestinian-Israeli theater. There are many Palestinians and Israelis who are very frustrated now with the current conditions, and they're losing hope. They're disillusioned, and they believe that time is running out on the two-state solution. Because, well, mainly because of the settlement activities in Palestinian-occupied territories. Will it still be possible to see a Palestinian state within the first Obama administration?
I think it is possible for us to see a Palestinian state. I'm not going to put a time frame on it. That is contiguous, that allows freedom of movement for its people, that allows for trade with other countries, that allows the creation of businesses and commerce so that people have a better life. And look, I think anybody who has studied the region recognizes that the situation for the ordinary Palestinian in many cases has not improved. And the bottom line in all these talks and all these conversations is a child in the Palestinian territories going to be better off? Do they have a future for themselves? And is the child in Israel going to feel confident about his or her safety and security? And if we can keep our focus on making their lives better and look forward and not simply think about all the conflicts and tragedies of the past, then I think that we have an opportunity to make real progress.
The other thing that impressed me about the Q&A session with this anchor person, this Al Arabiya reporter, was the fact that Barack Obama understood the issue. He understood it. He understood the individual points and questions the man was asking and knew how to answer them. But he was able to answer them in the context of the greater issue of the troubles between, if and I hate to minimize anything by using the word troubles, the troubles between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Barack Obama understands the Middle East from an historical perspective, from a cultural perspective, from a religious perspective, from just about any perspective you can think of. Imagine George Bush having this kind of interview with anybody, with Al Arabiya, with the BBC, with NBC, with Australian ABC, with the Canadian Broadcasting, with any network person. George W. Bush having this discussion. Yeah, well, don't try too hard. You'll hurt yourself, and we still have 2.5 hours left in the program. But you take my point, right? George Bush was a dumbass, just an absolute dumbass, who knew nothing about anything, but especially not the Middle East. So here we have a president, and by the way, neither did McCain. So here we have a president who is able to relate on so many levels to this entire issue. Oh, I'm sure that the right-wing bastards on talk radio are having a field day with this interview, right? We'll be right back.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. We are listening to a bit of Barack Obama's first interview, a sit-down interview with media since he became president, and that was with the Washington correspondent of Al Arabiya Radio or Television Network. This is the last one. The reporter then asked Obama how he was going to repair the damage that George W. Bush did to America's reputation in the Muslim world. This is a rather lengthy answer, but it would be good to hear this. The reporter says, "You are planning to address the Muslim world in your first 100 days from a Muslim capital. I don't want to exaggerate, but there is a demonization of America. It's become like a new religion. And like a new religion, it has new converts. Like a new religion has its own high priests. And in the last, well, since 9/11, and because of Iraq, that alienation is wider. And in generations past, the United States was held high. It was the only Western power with no colonial legacy." What is your message, the reporter asked, to them?
My job is to communicate the fact that the United States has a stake in the well-being of the Muslim world, that the language we use has to be language of respect. You know, I have Muslim members of my family. I have lived in Muslim countries.
The largest one.
The largest one, Indonesia. And so what I want to communicate is the fact that in all my travels throughout the Muslim world, what I've come to understand is that regardless of your faith, and America is a country of Muslim, Jews, Christians, non-believers, regardless of your faith, people all have certain common hopes and common dreams. And my job is to communicate to the American people that the Muslim world is filled with extraordinary people who simply want to live their lives and see their children live better lives. My job to the Muslim world is to communicate that the Americans are not your enemy. We sometimes make mistakes. We have not been perfect. But if you look at the track record, as you say, America was not born as a colonial power, and that the same respect and partnership that America had with the Muslim world as recently as 20 or 30 years ago There's no reason why we can't restore that. And that, I think, is going to be an important task. But ultimately, people are going to judge me not by my words, but by my actions and my administration's actions. And I think that what you will see over the next several years is that I'm not going to agree with everything that some Muslim leader may say or what's on a television station in the Arab world. But I think that what you'll see is somebody who is listening, who is respectful, and who is trying to promote the interests not just of the United States, but also ordinary people who right now are suffering from poverty and a lack of opportunity. I want to make sure that I'm speaking to them as well.
You know, another amazing thing about Barack Obama, he speaks in sentences and paragraphs. And he doesn't say things like misunderestimate. I mean, the difference here between the intellect of Barack Obama and the, oh my God, I almost said intellect of George Bush. There was no such thing. It's incredible. And once again, he mentions America as a country of Muslims, Jews, Christians, and non-believers. I would be more comfortable if he said the non-religious, because those of us who are atheists or humanists or secular humanists or whatever you want to call it, we believe in things. We are not non-believers. We just have a belief system that does not incorporate religious superstition or mythology. But I was just so impressed with this, and there was nothing earth-shaking in what he said. The only thing that was so pronounced, because it was in such a directly opposite manner in which George Bush or Dick Cheney or any of these bastards would have done, even Bill Clinton, was the fact that Barack approached this with an attitude of strength plus humility. Humility is, as most people should understand, is not equal weakness. In fact, humility is strength reworked. So many people understand that, but we've had so few leaders who understand that. So I am cautiously optimistic, not because I am judging Barack Obama, please. I'm cautiously optimistic because of what I heard, because of the words that were said. The questions were direct, and the answers were direct, and that is astonishing. It's astonishing. I can think of no American media person who would have asked the questions in as direct a manner, as straightforward a manner, as this reporter, or bureau chief, I should say, for Al Arabiya. There was none of the cloying, coy, beating around the bush kind of question that American reporters are so used to presenting to someone in a position of political power. Now, whether they do that because they have been beaten into submission or because they're idiots, I'm referring to the press, or they lack courage, or they don't know how to phrase the question, I have no idea. It could be a bit of all of that. But to hear this Al Arabiya reporter or bureau chief asking direct questions, getting direct answers, everything in context, everything within the subtext of everything was within a historical framework that included not just cultural differences, but also religious differences, societal differences. On and on and on. And as Obama said, in a manner of speaking, I don't have the quotes from his entire session here, but as he said, he doesn't condone acts of terror or any sort of act that is outside, I think he was saying this, outside the law. Now, I'm putting words in his mouth, understand. But that was the feeling I got. that he was being respectful, but he was also saying that, you know, there is so far that we'll go, and then we will wait for everyone else to come meet us and we'll talk, but we're not going to go way, 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 way over there. This has got to be a mutual agreement. So I found it to be, or a mutual understanding. Mutual effort is the word I'm looking for. So I just found the whole thing to be incredibly different, refreshing, whatever. The other Obama story today was the more than 2 hours he spent in closed-door meetings with the congressional zombies, the Republicans, trying to explain to them his economic stimulus plan, taking questions from them, too. Can you imagine the difference in the questions, tone, content, structure, attitude, thrust from these morons in the Republican leadership and the guy from El Arabiya? Can you imagine? And he urged these thugs to, quote, put politics aside and do the American people's business right now, end quote. Good luck with that one. Easier to find a peaceful solution to the Israeli-Palestinian issue than to try to do business with Republicans. But it was an extremely rare event for a president to sit down. I don't know if it's ever happened before, has it? For a president to sit down with the opposite party caucus, the entire caucus, not just two or three representatives, but anyone in the Republican Republican congressional caucus who wanted to be there. All couple hundred of them, if they or whatever it is. How many is it? 180 or 190? I don't know. But anyone who wanted to be there was welcome to be there. Who has done that before? After the meeting, he told reporters, quote, "We had a wonderful exchange of ideas, and I continue to be optimistic about our ability to get this recovery package done to put people back to work." But, of course, Representative John Boehner of Ohio, the House Republican leader, being completely lost in the thicket of his own mind. Has there been any least effective leader of Republicans in the past, I don't know, generation than this guy, Boehner from Ohio? I mean, my God. He and Eric Cantor of Virginia, the number two Republican, are not interested in doing business at all. They're interested in doing what they do, obstruction. And then this other guy, Mike Pence of Indiana, the chairman of the Republican Conference, who who said the Democrat instead of Democratic bill won't stimulate anything but more government and more debt. they just can't let it go, can they? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Don't be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute. Too shocking to see.
Trouble, oh, trouble. 10 before the hour. got an email here from Bridget, Bridget Wolf. One of our ethical advisors on this program. And she said, she's been spending a lot of time at home doing some stuff with the Fairy Woodland site and doing her own writing. And she said, I read your blog today. With a little distance, I think I figured out Obama's method. She says, In my therapy practice, I saw a lot of couples. That was work I really enjoyed because I loved the visceral, head-shaking, jaw-dropping realizations that two people could see the same situation so differently. I will never forget one couple who were the classic rational/emotional conflict. And please note that although this example runs on traditional gender roles, I do not mean to reinforce the usual stereotype. She would tell him what was bothering her, often with tears in her eyes. He understood how she could feel that way. She went into more detail and more tears. He calmly let her know he understood how she could feel that way, but that wasn't what he said, how it happened, what he meant. Take your choice. Her voice rose, and she accused him of not really understanding her. He, still calm, assured her that he did. He just saw the situation differently. She started shouting. Well, I think you get the picture. The calmer and more rational he stayed, the more out of control she spun, because what she really wanted, to rattle him, shake his cool, get him emotionally involved, wasn't happening. The more reasonable he stayed, the more she escalated into emotional instability and irrationality until anyone listening would have thought she was a crazy person. Now, that's not a good model for interpersonal relationships, but it just may work with rodents. Doesn't John Boehner look like a rat? John Boehner look like a rat with that pointy jaw and those teeth? Although Obama describes himself as eternally hopeful, he's also a very smart judge of people, and I think he knows damn well he's not going to get a thing out of these Republicans. But maybe if he keeps showing up, being reasonable, quote, listening, end quote, and they keep foaming at the mouth, more and more of the country will see how insane they really are and relegate them to the padded rooms where they can spew on each other and let Obama and the rest of us get on with trying to pull this country out of the trash heap. So that's my theory. What do you think, Bridget? Yeah, I think you may be right. I think I made an allusion to this kind of behavior on Barack Obama's part, only I called it rope-a-dope. The old Muhammad Ali trick, especially against, was it Joe Frazier? Where it's a whole different thing. It was more passive-aggressive, I guess, in a literal sense. But Muhammad Ali, round after round after round, just stood there and took the blows from Frazier on and on. Was it Frazier or was it, I think it was Joe Frazier. On and on and on and on. Until Frazier just tired himself out. And then, of course, Ali just beat him into the ground, and the fight was over. Was it Frazier? I think so. Anyway, so, but from a therapeutic standpoint, yeah, Bridget, who was a therapist, has, before she started on this other venture, has a good point here. There's nothing more maddening than when you're really pissed off at somebody, and they're just sitting there going, yeah, mm-hmm, I understand. Sure. Yeah. Okay. I hear what you're saying, right? I have a different perspective, but I hear what you're saying. Now, that only works if both people have a fairly good control of their emotions. You do hear what I'm saying? Yes. Well, then you can help me solve it, right? I think so. Okay, let's do this. But that's not usually the way that happens, is it? Of course not. So, good point, Bridget. Good point. And I would like to think that that Obama is using that type of psychological tactic, if that's the right way to put it, on the Republicans. Because, I think most of us who are on the proper side of the political spectrum in this country understand that Republicans are morons, out of control. And her reference to rodents had to do with what I wrote today at my blog, mini blog at MikeMalloy.com. If you haven't read it, go check it out. All right, what do we got? We got a break coming up here pretty quick. We mentioned the other night how television reported on a congressional budget office analysis at length over the past 6 days. and a report from the Congressional Budget Office that said it would take years before a spending program proposed by President Barack Obama would boost the economy. Right? We mentioned that. People like this jerk, John Boehner from Ohio, jumped on the story. It was reported last Tuesday by AP. The Associated Press reported on a leaked Congressional Budget Office analysis. Conservatives like Boehner jumped on the story, claiming the CBO had proved that, quote, government spending isn't going to get our economy back on track. On and on and on and on. Everybody's talking about it. After the first AP report, the rest of the media piled on. And according to thinkprogress.org, they found that since the AP's report last Tuesday, the Congressional Budget Office report has been cited 81 times on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, the Sunday shows, and the network newscasts in order to raise questions about Obama's recovery plan. The problem, of course, is there was no CBO report. It never existed. When we come back, I want you to hear what a couple of these people have said about a report that did not exist. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. And thanks to everybody who emailed me. It was not Joe Frazier. It was George Foreman that suffered Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope. Thanks, guys. Well, we mention occasionally new programs that are going to be available to you either via the internet or on the radio programs, internet streaming. I've got one for you. The editor of TVNewsLies.org, Jesse, who we've talked to on this program and whose work I've quoted here. We use a lot of the stuff at TVNewsLies.org. He now has a program on Wednesday evenings, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern. No, that doesn't compete with us. 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday evenings. You might want to check it out. He's got a guest tomorrow, Dr. and author Michael Rushnack. He's the author of Terminal Neglect. And he's going to be talking about his own personal journey from a medical professional who tried to change the system for the better to an author who uses fiction, or I don't know if you're familiar, the literary device faction, a combination of fiction and fact, to share some truth with the people. Now, you can get streaming information about this at TVNewsLies.org. Check it out. It's tomorrow night, I guess every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. TVNewsLies.org. Huh? Now, this Congressional Budget Office report that all the right-wingers, all the media pigs reported on, that never existed. It started out as an AP story. It was supposed to be a leaked analysis, quote, that had concluded that it would take years before Barack Obama's infrastructure spending program would boost the economy. Now, people like the usual pack of rats like John Boehner of Ohio jumped on the story, claiming that the CBO had proved that, quote, government spending is going to get our economy back on track, end quote. You know, the usual garbage, that it just sounds so 20th century. It is so not in the present tense. You know what I'm saying? It really isn't. Now, after the Associated Press first wrote up the so-called report, the rest of the media immediately grabbed it. And thinkprogress.org has done an analysis here and found that since the AP's report last Tuesday, the CBO non-report has been cited at least 81 times. On Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, The Sunday Shows, the network newscasts, and all of it in order to raise questions about Barack Obama's recovery plan. They don't do their own research. You know, these news bastards, so-called. You know, what kind of insanity is this? Charlie Gibson and his counterparts on the other two networks are on, I think, a total of 22 minutes an evening for this 5 nights a week. And occasionally they're sent on little junkets to appear as though they're out there in the field. 22 minutes. And for this, they get paid $10, $15, $20 million a year, whatever it is. Maybe not $20 million. That's up in Rush Limbaugh territory. But $10, $15 million a year to sit there and read copy 22 minutes a night. Jesus Christ. So now, allegedly, they have news staff, CBS, ABC, NBC, all the rest of them. They do have research people. They have fact checkers. They have people that could have simply picked up the phone and called the Congressional Budget Office. Huh? How hard is that? And said, hey, will you send over a copy of your report? We want to report on it tomorrow, and we'd like to get some details. they don't even do that. Not even that. Because had any of these media bastards done that, they would have been told by the CBO, what report? We don't have a report. We have done kind of a version, an earlier version of the stimulus plan. We've run it through a computer program that uses a standard formula to determine how quickly money will be spent, but we've done nothing. What are you talking about? But they didn't do that. So here you go. Let me cite four examples from Fox News, Carl Cameron. This was last week. Quote, there's a Congressional Budget Office report out today that suggests that the $825 billion stimulus proposal from Democrats, which is supposed to be timely and temporary, actually offers most of its spending a couple of years from now. End quote. No, it didn't say that because there was no report. Andrea Mitchell, MSNBC, the next day. Quote, even the Congressional Budget Office is very skeptical about the rapidity with which that stimulus, this set of proposals, can move through and that it could be 4 years before we see the results. End quote. That's Andrea Mitchell. You hear this? You hear this? Ed Henry, who is just grating on my nerves over at CNN, he says this 2 days later on the 23rd. He says, quote, well, that was another question raised in this Congressional Budget Office study. It was suggesting that a lot of the spending proposals in the original plan would not really take effect for a couple of years, so it wouldn't clearly help create jobs in the first 2 years of the president's administration. End quote. Ed, there was no study. And then Karen Tumulty, who should know better, on CNN, said on the 24th, said, quote, there was a report out earlier this week from the Congressional Budget Office pointing out that the appropriated funds, that portion of the stimulus package that, you know, less than half of that was really going to be spent even within the next 2 years, end quote. The CBO told the Huffington Post, Ryan Grimm, and the American Prospect's Tim Fernholz, quote, We did not issue any report, any analysis, or any study, end quote. Instead, the CBO said they ran a small portion of an earlier version of the stimulus plan through a computer program that uses a standard formula to determine how quickly money will be spent. And as the Center for American Progress senior fellow Scott Lilly notes, even that CBO analysis is based, quote, almost entirely on a review of historical data on program performance, which likely applies less during an economic crisis like the one we currently face. End quote. Now, the director of the Office of Management and Budget says that 75% of the stimulus plan will be spent over the next 18 months. But you see how this works? Now, why would Carl Cameron at Fox, Andrea Mitchell at MSNBC, Ed Henry at CNN, Karen Tumulty at CNN, and the rest of them, Charlie Gibson and his crew over at ABC, the crew at NBC, the crew at CBS, why would these people report specifics from a report that doesn't exist? Why would they do that? Do you have any ideas? Can I see some hands? Ah, okay, yeah. Because they are... No, I can't say that word. Because they are not interested in reporting the truth. They don't care. They take whatever handouts they can get their hands on. Nobody wants to do any research. These are not news reporters. I don't know what they are. They are corrupt. I mean, how can you talk about a CBO report that specifically says spending proposed by Barack Obama in some instances may not occur for 4 years when no such report exists? How can you do that?
I'm so carefree with a joyless heart. And sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. And you finally see my other side. Hey, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Raging Lefty in Minneapolis writes, excuse me, dear Mike, as a nurse, it took me about 20 years to figure out that you cannot reason with people who have dementia, people who are psychotic, people with brain damage, or Republicans. Obviously, President Obama has figured this out already. Hopefully, the American public will figure out this truism sooner rather than later. Yeah, and it's going to take some of Barack Obama, who defines cool, who has an absolute presence, a very centered man. There's no question he is centered. I'm not saying he... I don't know anything about him. I bet he gets upset about things. I bet he gets pissed off occasionally, but he's very centered. And if anybody can handle Republicans and world leaders, it's going to be this guy. You watch. Now, whether or not he can resist the corruption of corporate America remains to be seen. I hope he can. I really do. George writes about fake news. Mike, I'm not surprised at all that all of the mainstream media outlets picked up on the fake CBO analysis they got from the Associated Press and the Republicans. It seems to be in their nature. Remember a few years ago when John Stossel, a fascist if ever there was one, did a so-called story on the alleged dangers of organic food? Stossel used a fake report that he knew was fake as a basis for the whole program. He got caught. And after he got caught, he did a very half-assed apology, and instead of being fired for doing a fake news report, he was promoted to a news director at the network. What does that tell you? No wonder Obama talked to Al Arabiya before he wasted his time with our sorry broadcast media. George, yeah, I remember that. I remember that story. Yeah, I wouldn't trust Stossel as far as I could throw ABC television network. One last thing here, and then I want to do some, for a while anyway, tonight. I want to hear what you've got to say. The number is 800-989-1480. So if you want to get online, this is the last one from me. We'll take your calls after the break. Last night, this is from, where's this from? This is why Republicans or conservatives are just subhuman. I think this is from Think Progress. Last night on the O'Reilly Factor, O'Reilly blasted Afghan President Hamid Karzai for appealing to U.S. forces. Hamid Karzai begged U.S. forces to do more to limit civilian casualties in Afghanistan. Right? Now, we all know Karzai is a thug and a thief and a liar, but he was saying, please, to the U.S. forces, please try to limit civilian casualties here in Afghanistan. So O'Reilly called this appeal insulting and suggested that Afghans are ungrateful for the support they receive from U.S. forces. He said, here's a quote, U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan are risking their lives to protect the Afghan people from the Taliban and al-Qaeda. But President Karzai does not seem to get that. Once again, he has condemned American forces after a raid killed some civilians. Karzai doesn't understand that in war, collateral damage is constantly present. U.S. military is investigating the situation, but fact-checked here believes Karzai is making a political grandstand play, and it's insulting. Without us, his head is on a stick. Jesus God. What he was referring to is a recent airstrike that the U.S. military claims killed 15 Taliban fighters. But people in Afghanistan claim that 16 civilians were killed. It's just incredible. According to the latest U.N. figures, foreign forces in Afghanistan were responsible in 2008 for 577 civilian deaths, including 400 caused by airstrikes. And, of course, the increase in civilian casualties is going to do what? That's right, decrease public support for the Afghan government and the presence of international forces. Even Robert Gates, defense secretary, in congressional testimony today said, quote, civilian casualties are doing U.S. interests enormous harm in Afghanistan. Well, I have a suggestion, Secretary Gates and President Obama, if I may. Why don't we leave? Why don't we just get out of Afghanistan? Why don't we do what Alexander the Great, the British Empire, and the Soviet Union should have done before they lost tens of thousands of their people? Why don't we leave? There is no force on earth other than nuclear carpet bombing that can subdue the tribal people of Afghanistan. I mean, even I know that. Even I know that. Rudyard Kipling, Barack Obama is a reader. Maybe he should read some Rudyard Kipling. Read some poetry about laying on the field in Afghanistan. Wounded. Just roll over on your grenade and pull the pin. Or whatever the poem says. I can't think of it offhand. Don't send it to me. I'll look it up during the break. But why are we there? We'll be back after the break and take some of your phone calls if you want to call in. 800-989-1480. Stay with us.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Twenty-five before the hour. Did we trick anybody into calling in? Oh my God, we did. All right, well then let's chat. Big D is calling from Atlanta, listening on the internet. Hey, Big D.
Hey man, what's going on?
You are.
I love you, but let me make this quick.
Wait a minute. This is my man Daryl.
Yeah, man, I know, but you know, I'm in the cut, just sitting back.
What is this your new name?
Well, I flip the script every now and then, you know. I use the Big D, you know, Daryl.
Hi, Daryl.
But I'm not gonna take a lot of time. I just love to listen to you, but I had to call in tonight, man, because I truly feel like there's an episode on the Twilight Zone. I love it. It's Captain Kirk is on his airplane. And he's trying to tell everybody on the plane that there's a monkey, some kind of monster monkey out on the wing trying to tear it up. And everybody think he's crazy.
Right.
This is how I feel sometimes. 26 freaking years of this with these Republicans. You know the game.
I do indeed.
I feel like I'm shouting to the top of my lungs. Oh, my God, please. These fly monkeys, that's it. These fly monkeys are out on the plane,
yeah.
And we are going to crash.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to tell you what I did for the past 10 years when that sniggling George got in office.
All right, tell
I paid my mortgage off. I paid my cars off.
Uh-huh.
I got all my debt down because we are headed for pure D hell. And dang if it didn't happen.
Yeah, we're heading for a brick wall. You're absolutely right. We've tried to do the same thing. Just getting prepared for the worst, Daryl.
Yeah, can I tell you honestly, just between you and me and your
wife?
Okay,
I won't tell anybody. Go ahead.
Don't tell anybody, okay? It's going to get worse.
Ah!
You ready for it?
I can't. No! Where did you hear this?
Well, a little birdie told me that it's going to get a raw dog, man.
I know. I know it is. You know, I've got grown kids and I've got grandchildren and I have my little 4.5-year-old and I tell my grown children, two girls and a boy, I just say, look, I should say two women and a man. Come on, Malloy. But I tell them, please, please, whatever you do, you know, batten the hatches, make sure that you don't have any of this, cancer-like credit card debt. Hold on to your rear end. You know, put $10 a week aside. You know, I've been telling them that forever. That's the same thing my mother told me, and I never did it. But I hope that they have done this because, you know, I've got friends in Atlanta who are in the – I've got one good friend who's in the reverse mortgage business. Now, he's not hurting. He's doing fine.
I know he's probably making bank.
That's right. But everything I'm here – I've got friends who are real estate brokers. Now they're going to go have to get a real job. But they're telling me it's going to be 2010. It's going to be 2011. Maybe 2012 before this stuff levels off. That's pretty scary to me. I mean, it really is.
It's very scary. And I did some. I don't know if it's crazy or not, but I actually went back to school, and that's my only debt. I'm getting ready. I'm a lawyer, and my goal.
What?
Listen, check this out.
Did you get your law degree?
I'm like 3 months away from getting my law degree from Mercer Law School in Macon. But check this out.
Good for you.
Well, I don't know, but my focus is guess what?
What?
Bankruptcy. You think I can make a little cheese?
Well, I hear that. I hear that.
I hate to pick on carcasses, man, but
my wife Kathy, you remember Kathy? She is just a little bit shy. She might go to Mercer here in Atlanta.
Okay.
Or in Atlanta, because we're not in Atlanta, but here in the Atlanta area, she may go back to Mercer, which is where she started 1,000 years ago, and finish up with her degree in counseling, social work, psychology.
That's going to be work for that, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. Man. That's what I'm talking about.
We both going to be picking up on the carcasses, but I hate to put it that way, but mental illness out here is freaking believable.
It is, Daryl.
And it's like you said, it's a sociopath.
Yeah.
The sociopaths have been running this thing, and we're just going to have to ignore them. That's all I can say.
I know.
Yeah, but listen, I'm gonna get gone, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, good to hear from you, Daryl. Take care. Take care. All right. Big D. Daryl is getting his law degree. That makes sense. For a while, way back and forever ago, Daryl was so outspoken. He used to call radio talk shows, including mine here in Atlanta. And he was so good that the Clear Channel station here hired him. And he was on, I forget what time, so I think he was on, I think they put him on right opposite me because I was on a different station. But he was good. But then he realized that, you know, if you want to pay your bills, if you want to have job security, stay away from radio. Just get away from radio. Back to your phone calls. Alan is calling from Miami. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey, Alan.
Well, you talk about that the phony report and all that stuff. Just, you know, they're going to say something all the time. They're going to invent something because, you know, years ago they came up with the objective of the idea is to obliterate the enemy. And democracy is the enemy of these guys.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's absolutely true.
And until we realize this, one of the things that bothered me throughout the whole campaign is that, once again, it's like they have a regular war, and they have generals and lieutenants and soldiers, foot soldiers and everything. And that explains what they do, because they're foot soldiers. They'll do whatever it is because they know they're out to get us.
Now, the foot soldiers you're talking about are the people who read the news at night on the networks.
Yeah. And so these people are out there, each one taking their little job and doing stuff, and they immediately went to attack, of course, because that's all they know what to do. And until it seems to me that we start to treat it like that,
until
we start getting tough and say, look, you know, whenever they say something like this, for people to come back and say, look, you caused this thing. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be out there saying that. And the more that they say it, I mean, not that we have to take the tactics completely of them, but if they're going to continue to attack in this fashion, you must have some sort of attack based upon the truth that you come back and you say, you know, this was caused, and, you know, there should be people in jail because of this bailout. Now, we got to stop playing around here. If you say that this, you know, stimulus pact isn't going to work because it's not going to kick in for a couple of years, well, then if it's not going to kick in for a couple of years, even if that's true, then we better get started sooner rather than later, because there's nothing that you guys have done that have made it any better.
Yeah, that's true. Even if this bogus report was true, which of course it's not. Hey,
no.
Alan, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Okay.
Sure thing. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Exactly.
This story was on the news earlier tonight, and now it's on the Times website. This is so tragic. I normally don't like to talk about this kind of story here in the States, but it's from Los Angeles, and this guy shot and killed his wife and his five young children before he committed suicide today. And it's being reported that apparently he did that out of despair after the couple lost their jobs at a hospital. Now, you know, who knows? To commit mass murder and then kill yourself, is the loss of a job able to trigger that in a person, or are there massive underlying problems? I mean, you make your own decision on that one. But officers responding to 9/11 calls placed by this man, Irvin Lupo, and by a television station, because Lupo had sent a fax about 8:30 this morning to the TV station, found seven bodies in a house in a working-class neighborhood near the Port of Los Angeles. The bodies were identified as Mr. Lupo, his wife Anna, their 8-year-old daughter, their 5-year-old girl twins, and their 2-year-old boy twins. Jesus, God. Lupo had telephoned and sent a fax to KABC television that indicated, quote, he was despondent over a job situation and he saw no reasonable way out, according to a police spokesman. Man. He left, he faxed a letter to KABC, and the letter said Mr. Lupo and his wife had worked as medical technicians at a Kaiser Permanente hospital in West Los Angeles. and recently lost their jobs after a dispute with a hospital administrator. The administrator, the suicide letter said, had asked them why they had come to work and then added, "You should go home and blow your brains out." And 2 days after that confrontation, the Lupos lost their jobs and began planning the deaths and those of their children, according to the suicide note. Who knows? Mr. Lupo said in the note that his wife had asked, "Why leave the children to a stranger?" And so Lupo wrote, "Here we are." Jesus. Well, you know, Daryl and I can make jokes about how, excuse me, there are certain vocations or professions in this country that are going to need a lot of employees: bankruptcy lawyers, nurses, physicians, suicide intervention people, counselors, therapists. Yeah, we can make jokes about that, but it's true. It's true. And it's a reflection on more than just the crappy situation we find ourselves in this society. I think it's a reflection on what we consider to be important things in a society that's about 98.6% materialistic. Huh? What a sad story. We'll be right back.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 9 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Who we got here? Don is calling from Largo, Florida, listening on Sirius. Hey, Don.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Well, you know, I think we ought to have internet, TV, and radio signal for candidates for U.S. Congress, U.S. President, U.S. Senate with less than $5 million in bribes, spending, or net worth. We just throw money, our great-great-grandchildren's money, into corporations that's unaccountable and like the touchscreen voting machines, you know. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to have all these multi-million-dollar bribe takers give away our money hand over fist like they've been doing.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't disagree with that. Let me share the latest with you, Don. Now, we talked about this when it occurred, but not in very much depth. Sam Stein, writing at Huffington Post, has this: 3 days after receiving $25 billion in federal bailout funds, Bank of America hosted a conference call with conservative activists and business officials to organize opposition to the U.S. labor community's top legislative priority, and that is the Employee Free Choice Act. It was a phone call on October 17th. Also on the call was another bailout recipient, AIG, the big insurance company that was too big to fail. Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot, led the call along with Rick Berman. He is an opponent of the Employee Free Choice Act and founder of something called the Center for Union Facts, which is the Center for Union Lies, because it's put together by a right-wing son of a bitch who should be run out of the country. But over the course of an hour, according to Sam Stein, the two, Bernie Marcus and Rick Berman, framed the legislation that would allow workers to join a union by filling out a card as an existential threat to American capitalism. Marcus said, quote, "This is the demise of a civilization. This is how civilization disappears. I'm sitting here as an elder statesman. I'm watching this happen, and I don't believe it." End quote. Have you seen what's going on with Home Depot lately? This miserable son of a bitch. Marcus and this other guy, Rick Berman, said that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, were needed to prevent America from turning into France. Marcus said, quote, "If a retailer has not gotten involved in this, if he has not spent money on this election, if he's not sent money to Norm Coleman out in Minnesota and all these other guys, they should be shot. They should be thrown out their goddamn jobs." End quote. That's Bernie Marcus, one of the founders of Home Depot, showing his deep appreciation for the bailout that has gone to Bank of America and AIG and all these other predatory, miserable sons of bitches. You wonder where this money's going? That's why that first $700 billion, I got to have it today or the world's going to explode. Remember when Paulson said that? The Bush whore, no offense to sex workers, remember? God, these people are filthy. The audio of this call was obtained by Huffington Post. In the phone call, Marcus also said, "If I were a shareholder and I knew the CEO of the company I had stock in wasn't doing anything on this union crap, I would sue the son of a bitch. I am so angry at some of these CEOs, I can't even believe the stupidity that's involved here." What's the stupidity? To allow workers to form a union. Then he said this, Bernie Marcus, "This bill may be one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. You know, I could have been out on a 300-foot sailboat out, or 350-foot boat out in the Mediterranean. But I think it's more important to engage in this fight. It's incredible to me that anybody could have the chutzpah to try and pass this bill in an election year, especially when you have an economy that's a disaster, a total absolute disaster." Well, Bernie, it's because of people like you that the economy's in a disaster, you filthy snake. At one point, another individual on this conference call suggested that the people, the participants, send major contributions to Rick Berman's organization as a way of affecting the election and do it sneaky so they wouldn't violate the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law. This is before the election. The man, likely Stephen Hantler, the director of free enterprise and entrepreneurship at Bernie Marcus's Marcus Foundation, said, "Some organizations have written checks for $250,000, $500,000, some for $2 million for this." They should be eliminated from American society. They should just be eliminated. These rich, filthy bastards, they want everything. They don't want anything to be shared with the working class in this country. Eliminate them. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Oh, and just for the record, John Conyers, the committee chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has subpoenaed Karl Rove once again to ask some questions about what Karl Rove knew about the politicization. Well, you try it. Politicization of the Justice Department. The same committee had subpoenaed Rove during the last Congress, but Rove refused, claiming he had executive privilege. Jesus. Now, remember, Conyers originally or previously had subpoenaed White House counsel Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton, the former chief of staff, Bush's chief of staff, because he wanted to get any information they had. And according to Politico.com, Conyers is trying to get any information, any documents related to the firing of 9 U.S. attorneys. Now, you also remember when the White House refused to comply with those subpoenas and Harriet Myers refused to even appear before the committee to answer the subpoena. I mean, she didn't even show up and say, I respectfully refuse to have anything to do with you jackasses because I claim executive. She didn't even do that. The Judiciary Committee sued. A federal judge backed the committee in a major win for Conyers and House Democrats. But a resolution of this case is still in the courts, has been delayed because of the changeover in administrations. Obama, on the other hand, has vowed to comply with congressional subpoenas. Gee, what a novel idea. Obeying the law. Conyers said, quote, I've said many times that I will carry this investigation forward to its conclusion, whether in Congress or in court, and today's action is an important step along that way, end quote. Rove has until February 2nd to respond to the subpoena. And Rove's lawyer didn't return calls or emails seeking comment. Good on John Conyers. Good for him. Go, John. Try to get this weaselly son of a bitch. But what about the rest of it, fellas? What about the war crimes? What about the crimes against humanity? What about violations of U.S. law? Well, I guess you have to start somewhere, right? All right, back to your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Let's go back to Gene, who's calling from California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Yes.
Hi.
It is Mr. Malloy?
Yes, it is.
My question was when you earlier you had said you wanted to someone talk about Afghanistan and leaving. I know all the ramifications why we shouldn't be there, but the one thing I've been thinking about lately is Pakistan. It's almost like the problems of the past coming back to roost. My thing is what I'm worried about is in the future is one of these ISI officers handing off some nukes or whatever to one of these Taliban guys and passing it off and
sure.
Using it against us.
Sure.
My thing is, I think Obama, hope he don't get suckered in into like, all right, go after Afghanistan, but the Taliban has a base in Pakistan. I think I'm worried about his biggest challenge in foreign policy is going to be Pakistan. It's almost like a reoccurrence of Iran with the Shah. We left him alone. He said he knew what he was doing inside his country, and it came back to roost. Mm-hmm. The ISI, in my opinion, is somewhat the same. And the biggest thing, the difference is they have nukes.
Yeah, that's true. And the ISI, the Pakistan Intelligence Service, is it's my understanding, Gene, it's already chock-a-block with Taliban sympathizers, people who sympathize with that extreme orthodox religious
Wahhabism from Saudi Arabia.
Right. It's all, the only thing they're waiting for is for the government of Pakistan, this newly elected government, whether it's corrupt or not, it was elected, to collapse. And
right.
one thing that will help that collapse is for the CIA to continue to slam missiles into Pakistan.
Right. That's the thing I've been thinking lately. I mean, everybody's worried about Israel and the Palestinians. That's bad. And Iraq, in our land, but Pakistan has nukes. And these guys, and then the American needs, Obama needs to give us education. Pakistan's biggest enemy is India. And the geopolitical of the region is so complicated that if people don't understand, like, why we shouldn't be there and how we should go about it a different way, not with the military, but some other way, that's the scariest thing I see for Obama in foreign policy is Pakistan.
I think you're right, Gene. And a lot of people who understand this geopolitical mess on a deeper level than you and I, and you and I probably understand it better than 95% of Americans. I'm not talking about people who listen to this program. They understand it, too. But those experts just continue to point out that Pakistan could be the flashpoint to take the whole planet into something that none of us want to go to. Whether it's Pakistan, India, or Pakistan, anybody. And as Gene pointed out, and I think most of the people, again, who listen to this program understand this, Pakistan, with their nuclear weapons that we helped them get, of course, Pakistan, with those nuclear weapons, has the potential to hand off those weapons to people who would use them. Any use of nuclear weapons is a crime against God for people who believe in God. It's a crime against their God. I don't care what their religion is. When the United States used nuclear weapons, it was a crime against the Christian God. If the Israelis ever use weapons like that, it's a crime against the Hebrew God. If any Muslim ever uses a nuclear weapon, you understand what I'm saying? It's a crime against Allah. Any individual or nation who uses nuclear weapons is committing a crime against their God, but also a crime, for those of us who don't follow these superstitions, it's a crime against life, the universality of life. Nuclear weapons are unspeakable. But there are people on this planet of several religious persuasions who have no problem, Jack, with saying, well, you know, it's been a bitch here on earth. I'm ready to go meet fill in the blank. And I don't care if I take 3-4 billion people with me. So give me the match and show me the fuse. I'm ready to light it. There are Muslims, Christians, and Jews who are willing to do that. You know it as well as I do. Touchy times. I hope nobody starts feeling froggy and decides to jump. Don't you? Lonnie is calling from Fredericksburg, Virginia, listening on Sirius. Lonnie, welcome to the Malloy program.
Hey, Mike. I love your show. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hey, I actually could have an interesting conversation about the last topic, but it's kind of something I can't touch. I'm a recently retired military bomb squad type, and I've done my tours in all the war zones and kind of turned liberal, actually more leftist after living in the neocon world for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an early Obama supporter, and when he first declared and dumped a lot of money into him, and I did that because I believed he'd shake up D.C. and kind of break the mold. But the day that he was in office, if you go to his website under the and I don't know where you fall out on this policy, but if you go to the website for whitehouse.gov and look under urban policy, and then
hey, Lonnie, hold on a minute. I got to do a break, but I want to hear what you got to say. So let me put you on hold, okay? And we'll come back right after the break and continue with Lonnie. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 21 past the hour. All right, we were talking with Lonnie in Fredericksburg, Virginia, about Obama's website. I think you were getting ready to say something about Obama's website.
Yeah, actually, is this Mike again?
Yes.
Hey, Mike, I'm sorry. Listen, hey, one thing that I was concerned with and a little bit worried about was my liberal friends, this liberal movement that we're having right now. Mm-hmm. They're always on the correct side of the rights of man, but they always make the exception for the right to keep and bear arms. And I'm wondering why they do that. And one of the things that I'm afraid of is just that one hot button issue is going to jeopardize the rest of the movement.
Okay, I've talked about this so many times, but maybe, you know, it wasn't a night you were listening. Lonnie, who's the only president who ordered the seizure of guns in the United States, you know, in the past 100 years?
I don't know if it's been done
okay.
in the past 100 years.
Okay,
no.
How about in the past 3 years? Would that narrow it for you? The answer is George W. Bush, when after Katrina, he sent Blackwater in to take control, and the order was to seize all weapons, whether they were legal, illegal, licensed, unlicensed, no matter who had them, black, white, Jew, Gentile, rich, poor, take the guns. Now, I talked about this on the air for several nights because I remember when Bush stole the first election back in 2000, it looked real close. I was up in Tennessee, and in Tennessee, all over the place, there were flyers that said President Al Gore would immediately seize guns. Now, of course, he wouldn't. Al Gore was a member of the NRA. I was a member of the NRA. I've said that before on this program, before they went crazy. I'm a gun owner. I know lots of liberals who are gun owners. We're not fools. We understand the biggest threat is not Democrats who are trying to do good for America. The biggest threat are neo-fascist Republicans. You know, what did Hitler do as soon as he took power? Seize
the
guns.
Away, then he burned the books.
All right. So I don't understand, and maybe you can help me understand it. I'm really looking for some guidance right now. Where did this myth come from? That wait, let me finish the question.
Sorry.
You don't know what I'm going to ask. Where did the myth come from that liberals slash Democrats wanted to take away people's guns? Where did that ever come from?
I think it's a myth that's perpetuated by people to facilitate control of the parties. But the thing is, Mike, if you look on Obama's website, or I should say whitehouse.gov, and you look under urban policy, work your way down towards the end, he's got some pretty big hits on the agenda that are anti-Second Amendment.
Now, what would you consider to be anti-Second Amendment? Does it say anywhere on the site that you're talking about that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall be abridged? Or what does it say?
If you can look on the paragraph there, it says they want to open up registration records for the federal, state, local law enforcement.
Where does it say in the Second Amendment that there should be no registration? Everybody who buys a gun has to pass some kind of a background check. Jesus,
yeah,
God, I have a carry permit that I have to renew every 2 years. Do you think I give a damn? Even during the Bush years, do you think I cared if somebody knew my address? Do you know how easy it is to find...
Mike, I'm totally with you. When I retired, I started working for the government, but I'm also a FFL licensed gun dealer. Those records are maintained by FFLs, and then when FFL closes shop, he sends them back to the ATF, and they get put into a warehouse. The difference is they're not into an electronic database where the government can easily mine them.
But who cares? I mean, really, the only gun grab in this country was done by a Republican president. It had nothing to do with records. It had to do with if you see a gun, take it. That's all. I mean, I don't, and I'm going to have to leave it there. I appreciate everything you had to say, Lonnie.
Yeah,
but let me say this as a gun owner, multiple gun owner. I've never felt that there was any. I've never felt any fear from any liberal or any Democrat. Oh my God, Well, this is the mythology. This is what these sick bastards do, these Republicans, these right-wingers. They're the ones who would, given a chance, remove every weapon so that the people could not resist when they start their fascist takeover. Does somebody still think that there's going to be a communist takeover in America? Oh, my God! It's state fascism. It's these corporations now who are sucking all this money out of the taxpayer and then bitching and complaining if the taxpayer says no more $50 million jet planes. I mean, it's insane. It's everything is through the looking glass. Everything. And as paranoid as I can be about these fascists, it has never, ever, ever crossed my mind because it would never happen. When a liberal, I mean, my God, it was liberals who led the revolution in this country. It was liberals who wrote the Second Amendment. Why doesn't anybody understand that?
No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He'll abide forever by our right to bear Uzis. He's a man who never will learn. Georgie's gun-loving minions always greet him when he visits, and they give him a dollar or two. And because of all the loopholes they have given Georgie millions, it's insane. But sadly, it's true. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He will.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I usually don't do this, but what the hell. I got a letter here from someone named G. Roberts in Colorado who wants to know if the oh, God, why do this? His subject line says, and tell me why all the gun bills. If what I say is true, why H.R. 1022? I don't know what that is. Why the 50 caliber rifle ban? Jesus Christ, 50 caliber rifle? That's a sniper weapon you use to kill people on a battlefield. Are you paranoid, so paranoid, Mr. or Miss G. Roberts, that you've got to have a 50 caliber rifle? What the hell is wrong with you? Why not a bazooka? Why not a machine gun? Why not a 50 caliber machine gun? Why not mount it on your goddamn pickup truck? What is wrong with you? Why the move, he says, to require new federal licensing for anyone with more than 6 guns? I don't know. You have a problem with that? Jesus God. Why serial number every bullet? So if your wife is shot dead in a supermarket parking lot, they can pull the bullet out of her corpse and figure out who bought the goddamn thing and go arrest him. He writes, just California alone has a book full of proposed new gun bills. So? Wyoming is trying to pass legislation requiring that any amount of gunpowder be stored 1,000 feet from any occupied structure. Oh, well, that's an asinine law. Let's put it right. I'll tell you what, pal. Get your 1,000 pounds of gunpowder and put it under your kid's bunk bed. Why don't you do that? And then he says, seems the push is going to be against ammunition more than the guns. But H.R. 1022 outlaws everything but bolt-action deer gun and bird guns. Everything semi-auto is listed as an assault weapon. Explain, please. Oh, for Christ's sake. Let me tell you something, G. Roberts. You handle this one, okay? You do it. I don't give a damn. I am armed well enough to know that I can protect me and mine, or at least go down in a blaze of glory. The Second Amendment has never been under assault in this country. And I wish the right-wing crazy people in this country would understand that. God. And for you jackasses who don't remember, it was an attack on the sainted Ronald Reagan that brought about the Brady gun bill and all this other stuff that so many of you don't like. What the hell is wrong with you people? Buy your goddamn guns. Go shoot each other. Put gunpowder in your basement. Blow holes in your head. Get a 50 caliber machine gun and your neighbor get one and then spend Sunday afternoon blowing each other's asses away. Get off my email and my radio program with this nonsense. I'm so sick of this kind of paranoia. You people have been talking this garbage since the Nixon years, okay? And the only time any of this has ever come to pass has been under Republican. You really got this fear about your guns? Then vote Democratic. And put the neo-fascists, the Republicans, to the curb. Ah! All the problems we've got, and I have to get upset tonight about this kind of horse hockey. What about this? What about that? You want a 50 caliber machine gun? Where in the hell do you live? That you need a 50 caliber rifle. Oh, excuse me. That's right. It's for deer hunting. Never mind. 50 caliber rifle, for Christ's sake, at a mile it would blow somebody's head off. Why do you need that? Are the booger men coming after you? 50 caliber rifle. Yeah, that's a war weapon. I was determined to get through tonight without going ballistic. No pun intended. All right, didn't make it. Good God. That issue, it's been used so many times by the Republicans to jerk the necks of ignorant sons of bitches in this country who really do think that there's ever been a serious attempt to remove the Second Amendment. There was just a Supreme Court case, was it Supreme Court? That said the law in Washington, D.C., trying to restrict gun ownership was unconstitutional because the Second Amendment said thus and such. The Supreme Court has ruled. Why don't you people sit down and shut up? If you don't want to have legislation that requires you register more than 6 guns, well, then don't talk about it. Go to Mexico and buy 50 of them and put them in your goddamn house and wait for the booger bears to come and get you, okay? And then open fire. Just do me a favor with this particular issue. Don't email me. Don't write me. Don't call me. Don't anything about this issue. I am so sick of it. Because you people still don't get it. It's Republicans. It's conservatives who want to deny you a gun. It's them. Not Democrats. Not liberals. Not progressives. Oh, Christ. But the right-wingers have gotten a lot of mileage out of that one, haven't they? That's like the gay marriage thing. It's like the abortion thing. It's like the gun thing, huh? Right? It's like the so-called fair tax thing. They just beat this and beat this and beat this, right? Because they know, the right-wing politician wannabes or whoever, I can't run on anything about the economy or national security or international relations. What can I do? Oh, that's right. I'll just start yelling and screaming and peeing all over myself that the liberals are going to take our guns again. That'll get the votes. And you know what? It always does. Good God, stop me. Stop me. Stop me, please. Back to your phone calls. Michael is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Michael, welcome to the program. Please don't talk about guns.
Hello, Uncle Mikey. I had one hunting experience, and I threw everything away. I didn't give it away. I didn't sell it. My guns, my knife, my compass, my red jacket, everything. When I saw the abuses of these drunken bums and what they did, I wanted no part of that. And still to this day, not for me. But what I called about and told your screener, you were talking to Daryl about the sad state of affairs in the country. Mm-hmm. Well, the figures were just in from the end of the year, and it showed a 22% increase in applications for food stamps.
Oh yeah,
in Miami.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I wonder what it is.
County.
I wonder what it is across the country. You know, it's up. Visits to food banks is up. Unemployment request for unemployment comp. Food stamps. Everything is up. This is the result of all these glorious years of Bush economics. Here we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the county directly north, which is Broward, there was a 26% increase in applications for food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are not just the people who are applying. These are in addition to the people who already have it.
They want an increase.
Yeah. These are not your lower socioeconomic classes. These are people who are like middle class.
Sure.
And they're being destroyed, losing jobs, houses, everything. Like that poor fellow you were talking about who shot his whole family because he lost his job. Barack Obama is not going to solve anything, even if he wins the second term. This thing is going to get a lot worse, and it's going to take a lot longer to remedy.
I don't think Barack Obama has any intention of solving anything. I don't think FDR had any intention, or any president that is honorable and decent, not like the Republicans. I think what Barack Obama is trying to do is to provide leadership so that we can solve these problems ourselves through our elected representatives, if that's possible, through a change in attitude in Americans. You know, he says it over and over and over again that this is something we have to do. He doesn't have a lamp that he can rub and a genie pops out and Barack says, fix it. No, it's not going to happen that way. Oh, by the way, Rich in Minnesota writes, Mike, I wonder why more NRA members don't realize that if worse comes to worse, all Blackwater has to do is download the NRA membership file. With the breaking down of the doors of those members' houses, most of the guns in the country could easily be confiscated. Yeah. Yeah, why, you know, yeah. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
We wouldn't need the police no more because everybody would have a gun.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
Had a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
Had a gun.
Nobody'd ever get shot because everybody'd have a gun.
Makes sense.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? We go out and shoot things, 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 we go out and shoot things.
I've got to apologize. I didn't mean to go berserk like that. I really did think I was going to make it through the night without going off like a rabid dog. But I guess those little trigger issues like that can still get me, right? So anyway, I apologize for the trigger issues, yeah. No pun intended again. Oh, my God, I can't even talk tonight. But anyway, if all that string of profanity offended you, go listen to somebody else. No, I don't.
Take your gun. And...
right. Sorry about that. I don't know why that issue still gets me. It still pulls my chain when I hear somebody call in somebody calls in or writes. Not that the caller, he was making a point. But that email that came after that, I, it just, it, it's one of those issues that still can pull my chain or pull my daisy or pull something. But anyway, to our vast and erudite and well-spoken audience, I do apologize for the string of cuss words. Almost made it through the night. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor and manages the podcast. And by the way, we are getting ready to, probably tomorrow, we will have we'll send it to Ben, one of our Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag videos, now that the Christmas season is over and we can get back to the contempt and disgust and hatred that so many people love to dump on this program, which I find just incredibly amusing. So we'll have one up tomorrow. Thanks to Sharon Gordy, who is our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, who is our economic affairs advisor / correspondent, and our ethical overseers are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Okay, I think we have time. Yes, we have time. Orion, is that it? Orion is calling from Long Beach, California. Is it Orion?
Yeah, it's Orion.
Like the constellation?
Like the constellation, yeah. My parents were hippies.
Oh, your parents were hippies. All right. Hi, Orion.
Hey, how's it going? I was just calling in response to the homicide.
Horrible situation out there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually a suicide prevention counselor, and I just got off from the crisis center, and it was probably our busiest night.
Really?
I've been there for about 2 years. I've never seen it that crazy. We even had newspapers and a radio show actually call us to see if they can get an interview, which we directed to our supervisor. But
right.
It was crazy. It was really out of control.
You know, I used to work for one of those organizations in York, Pennsylvania. It was called Contact. And it was crisis intervention, and including suicide intervention. And you're right, as the calls that we would get, I always wanted to offer counseling, but you may be trained to do that. I wasn't. I had 50 hours of training on how to refer the calls, how to talk, listen to people, creative listening, whatever you want to call it. This is in a different lifetime, a long time ago. But I know doing that kind of work that you're talking about, it can be very unnerving because of the things that you hear. And you know that any second, the person that is talking to you about this kind of stuff can go completely over the edge, and I didn't last 2 years. I did it for about 4 months, and frankly, at the time, it was more than I could handle. So I respect that you're able to do that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we get calls sometimes that are just people who are thinking about suicide, and
right.
Then we get calls, rarely, fortunately, but we do get them where it's somebody who's got a gun to his head, and he's basically saying, "I'm up, pull trigger, tell me why not." So,
yeah, what was the, not necessarily the substance, but the tone of all the calls you all have gotten in the past, since this tragedy? Copycat situations, or?
No, actually, it was... It was mostly people, family members especially, who were very concerned about other family members who were just depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they never mentioned that they wanted to commit suicide. They didn't have a plan. They were just freaked out that maybe he or she was going to snap at any minute. And what should I do? And how should I talk to that person? So basically what I tell most of them is the best thing you can do is to just go to that person and ask them, hey, are you thinking about committing suicide?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, what's the plan? And once you assess the situation, then you basically let that person vent and just basically throw up all their emotions. And it might seem counterintuitive because you want to take them away from that dark place, but it's actually really good because you ground them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you ground them in the moment, because, you know, depression, you're either worried or scared about the past and the future.
Right.
When you ground them, they're more susceptible to other options,
mm-hmm.
to advice, to mm-hmm. suggestions that may help them.
Well, obviously, you know what you're doing. And I'll bet that you and your counselors are going to have just an abundance of these kinds of situations here. Isn't it a sad commentary on this society that suicide or murder is seen as a way out of a financial situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate form of something, I've heard it called selfishness. I really haven't really defined suicide yet. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to someone who's going through so much pain like that, and pain is so relative, I mean, the pain of taking a candy from a child is probably the same of my truck being stolen. So I can't really judge on, you know, whether it's right or wrong, but I can say that it doesn't help if, I mean, I don't know if the story of the guy that killed his family is true, but in his letter he said that basically Kaiser said that they were denied unemployment. And
I don't think it's difficult to make a moral or ethical judgment about someone who kills children. I really don't. Hey, Orion, thank you. I appreciate you checking in and your insight. Take care. I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.